Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Recently, I interviewed Jack Myers, who's a cultural and media visionary and the author of The Future of Men. And on the interview, Jack was sharing research about millennial women in the workplace and how they're really getting recognized quickly and moving up the ladder in their organizations. So I've kind of been taking note of more young professionals, specifically women, who are reaching director and VP levels in a relatively short period of time. Now, back in the day, and I don't want to date myself, but it took years to move through a hierarchy in an organization. Of course, it really depends on the organization. But personally, I'm so happy to see this happening. So on that note, I want to introduce my special guest today, because she's taken a very quick path to getting to the executive level. Her name is Samantha Paxson, and she reached VP status at the age of 30 in a financial services company. Now Samantha is the Chief Marketing Officer at Co-op Financial Services, and she's here to share her journey with you. Samantha, it's so great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I guess the burning question is, how does a young professional who has a background, a marketing background, land a VP position at a financial services company at the age of 30?
Well, part of it is luck. Part of it is passionate ignorance, yeah. Just not understanding that you have limitations. And part of it is just participating and saying yes and not being afraid. And I'll tell you a little bit about what I mean by that. When I was in college, I had a degree in journalism and had student loans and had to get out and make money quickly. And so I had this dream of being a journalist and working for the New York Times and maybe working in documentary film. And I had these dreams, but I had very real challenges in that moment, in that I had student loans and a car payment and rent, and I really didn't want to move home. And so I started working in public relations, and I had found a boutique PR firm that hired young go-getters and billed them out extensively and paid them cheaply. And what was good for me is that because I worked in this boutique agency, I was given a lot of responsibility and a lot of freedom to take on more, because I was kind of seen as cheap labor. And I got noticed by our clients. I had a lot of amazing experiences by just saying, yes, I will participate. I really was passionate about my own career growth, partly because I was hungry and had bills to pay and I wanted to eat something other than peanut butter and tortillas for dinner.
I love peanut butter, but
I know, but I wanted to have more, and I wanted to make an impact. And so the more that I participated and shared my thinking and educated myself more about writing and marketing and public relations, the more I grew into this marketing role. And the senior leadership at the agencies said, great, we don't have to hire a really seasoned person. We have this young person that seems to be with it and responsible and good at project management, good at strategy. And at a very young age, I was able to take on a lot of responsibility and had a lot of exciting clients. And one of them happened to be this small ATM network that was not nationwide at the time. And I had worked on that business, and they had a new opening for a head of marketing. And I think they viewed me the same way. They saw me as being a go-getter and being smart, but I think they saw me as cheap and not being a very important part of the financial services business. Marketing is traditionally not seen as being one of the most strategic parts of financial services. And they thought, score, we found somebody young and that we don't have to pay a lot and we've got that handled. So that gave me an opportunity. And so, like I said, partly it was luck. Partly it was just not being afraid to participate and being kind of ignorant to what that meant, to what that, you know, what if I did say something or speak up, what could that, what's my fear of what could happen if I participated? And the more I brought my ideas to the table, the more I spoke, the more I built relationships, I built trust, and was given the opportunity to come in at the ground level of the executive team.
That's amazing. So, you know, having this kind of, you know, not being afraid. And I think you had said once to me before, I was ignorant enough not to have fear. What happens when you say yes, because you have no fear? How did you, if you didn't know what to do, how did you pull it all together so that you could actually perform and be successful? What went through your mind and what resources did you use?
I have never stopped being a student, even when I graduated from college. I still write papers for a living. I still read for a living. When you graduate, you can never see yourself as being done, especially in today's world. So I was always reading and researching what best-in-class companies did to communicate, to market, to sell. How were they positioning themselves, and what could I learn from those companies, from those leaders, and apply to this business? And I did that for my clients back in my agency days. And I have an ability to connect dots, and I wasn't afraid to speak intelligently. However, I always did my homework. First, it's about having the confidence to speak, but be sure when you are ready to give your ideas that you do it in a very smart, practiced way, that you have great facts and evidence to back up your strategy.
That is really smart, because, you know, I know a lot of people work on the confidence factor and being able to command the room or have the presence when they walk into the boardroom. But let's face it, command all the presence you want. The minute you open your mouth, you have to have the facts and know, you know, inside and out what your area of expertise is. Otherwise, what good is having that kind of confidence or being seen that way if you can't back it up and truly show it? So
absolutely,
you're absolutely
right. And I would also say it's not just speaking. This is about collaborating with others and building relationships across an organization where you build trust and people believe in your judgment, so that when you do speak, even if the people above you think that you're not important or an underdog, or let's face it, I was a 30-year-old female in a room full of people 20 years my senior in a mostly male-dominated field. They looked at me and said, what is she going to bring? Yeah. What ideas is she going to have? This, she's the person that throws the parties and paints the pictures. That's not important to a financial services business. What helped was that I was able to bring positive change among my peers and people below me, and I'd reach across to different departments and to different areas. And I wasn't afraid to work with them. And the more that you reach out and you build your credibility and you build trust, the more people will listen to you. And that's how you get people to follow you. And it's kind of this informal leadership rather than a top-down, you're appointed. If you're already behaving in that next role and you're gaining that influence just by doing the right thing, you will be given the power and you will have it informally anyway.
Well, just what you said about the ability to bring people together to collaborate as a team. When you start doing this and showing leadership and you are more effective with your teams and you are on target, on time and under budget, guess what? That is so important to the leaders sitting at that boardroom table. That is, you know, the productivity is one of the financial buckets. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that everything that we do somehow has to tie to those business goals. So you just completely tapped into that and making a difference for the business. That was really good that you shared that. What do you think, how did you get prepared to move to the CMO level? What do you think prepared you the most to be a CMO?
That's a hard question. I think that understanding things that were larger than my role were really important. So I've done a lot of studying around our business and really understanding strategy as a whole has been important. And, you know, I was hired at the advent of the fintech revolution. We have in the time when I was 30 years old, which was 11 years ago, technology, it was just about to speed up, and social media did not exist. I carried a BlackBerry for the first time. The things that kind of always on technology revolution was just beginning, and I just happened to have creative problem solving skills that were perfect at this moment in time that helped bring about change in the organization that had a lot greater value than just pushing messages and creating events and creating a brand strategy. And the more that I helped solve bigger problems and reached out around the organization and really understood where consumer behavior was going and technology was going and our financial institution needs were going and how that fit into business trends as a whole, the more I evaluated that and synthesized it, I was able to provide more value to the rest of the company. And I didn't do it waiting for somebody to give me that opportunity or to anoint me with the responsibility of making that change. I would just go and do it and see a gap or a problem to be solved. And I'd reach out to that area and say, hey, have you guys thought about this? Have you seen how this might impact our clients in a more positive way? And the more that I did that, the more opportunity that it informally created for me and trained me into what a true executive would do in collaborating with an executive team, and it built trust across the organization. And it built my own confidence. It helped me understand that I didn't have to go ask permission with everything, that I could go participate and be a creative problem solver. And really, that's what you do as a leader. That's what you do at the executive team. And you just build your ability to do that the more you practice it.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, because that level of proactivity sets you apart. And when you're building, you know, building the trust and then having that confidence sounds like the major ingredients to be able to be on that executive level. And maybe that's something to think about for all those who wonder, you know, why am I stuck at a certain position? Why can't I just get to that next level? What you just spoke to really is good advice.
Yeah, I think as women, we always have a bit of a crisis of confidence. And I think that's why you hear people like Sheryl Sandberg saying, lean in. I think that's why we're taught to be obedient. And it's important to be persistent and participate and be positive. And reach out. Don't wait for somebody. I think we wait a lot for people to say, this is now your role. To be relevant in business today, everybody needs to be evolving their role, no matter where you sit in the organization. But I think as women, and I feel this in marketing, because I feel like marketing is a traditionally female role, though there's a lot of men out there that do it, but yeah, it's a traditionally female role. It's almost like today's, you know, back in the day, nurses were always seen as women. Teachers were always seen as women. It's almost viewed in that, I don't want to say sexist way, but, you know, it's seen as not important, not strategic, and doesn't make change in the organization. Each woman who might lead a marketing organization or in any role that they have, we have to fake it till we make it. You have to just, the more you participate, the more confidence you will have. And when you let your fear take over or stop you, is when you're giving up opportunity for yourself. Every time I've had my confidence wane, or where I've thought I shouldn't be the one sharing my story, nobody wants to hear what I have to say, is when I've given my opportunity to somebody else. I just handed it to them.
Yeah, and you definitely don't want to do that. Well, there's something to be said about controlling our own achievement and advancement, and not sitting back and waiting for anybody to assign something to you. So I took away three P's from you that I thought were really good. It's to be a participant, to be persistent, and be positive.
Yeah.
Which it goes a long way. It definitely does. I remember you saying to me, and this is switching gears a little bit, but certainly a part of your CMO role, technology without empathy is nothing. So how do you apply this personally and professionally?
Well, when people talk about technology, they think immediately about a thing or a product or a system. And what we don't always think about is the problem that it solves for the person using that thing, that product, or that system. And so we have to think about in my world, this is what I'm always evangelizing at Co-op, is that we can build products and we can build things for people to use. But if we haven't gone back and thought about, why would somebody want this? What is the problem that we have? What's a new way of delivering a technology that would solve a problem in a simpler way or in a less friction-filled way, or that would add additional value, that technology would have so much more power for that person and would be used so much more. So it's really walking in someone's shoes and really thinking about how they would, how a technology would improve their lives and improve their day to day. And people I've talked to and interviewed, technologists and people that are really doing amazing things in Silicon Valley, people that are making a big changes, in the tech world. And I've asked them what is the most important thing that you do? And every one of them say empathy. And what's interesting is that when I bring this up, a lot of times when we discuss this or when I first would broach this with our product department or our IT area or my peers in the leadership team, they'd think, oh, that's just marketing. They're just talking about soft things that aren't important. That is how the most sophisticated companies today are thinking about it.
Exactly, as well they should. Samantha, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break to give some love to our sponsor. When we get back, Samantha is going to share her thoughts on active branding and the effect that social media has on financial services today.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Samantha Paxson, CMO of Co-op Financial Services, and I were just chatting about how she was named a VP at a very young age and what helped her become a CMO. And Samantha, we sort of fast-forwarded. We got into the technology and the empathy and how, you know, you were saying that I guess that empathy was seen as being soft, and sure, that's just marketing. But what's really interesting is that we have data. You know, technology allows us to have all of this great data that when we filter down to it, we can see what people need and what consumers need. And then that allows us to have empathy. So I thought what you were saying was really interesting. Is it still an education process at your company? Over
absolutely. It's hard
work
to go
in progress
in kind of this. Yeah, you know, it's changing culture, and it's hard to go from being this kind of tech systems, back end ops type organization and imbue that with creative thinking and collaboration and innovation. Those are words that I think women do really well, and I'd even say mothers do well. That ability to juggle multiple things and problem solve in the moment while thinking of how somebody else might be impacted is something women do well. And we can do things at speed. We can do process redefinition, organic prototyping that would improve and evolve a system or a process that would help an end user. If you think about what a mother does, or a woman does every day, the working mother, it's interesting. I had I look back at the first several years of my. I have an almost 5-year-old son, and when he would go to daycare, he'd get sick a lot, and I'd have conference calls, and I'd have to get to a meeting, and I'd have to figure out, oh my gosh, he's got hand, foot, mouth. How am I going to participate in these calls and make sure someone can care for him and demonstrate that I'm still on top of the task at hand? And in that moment, I would have a sitter come over. I'd go lock myself in a room, give a presentation while he's sick in the other room. You find a way to problem solve and juggle very, very well because you have to do it often. It's kind of like the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours argument that to be very good at a certain thing, you have to have 10,000 hours of practice.
I think we're getting a lot of practice.
Yes, yes.
Definitely.
So you can apply that kind of thinking to technology, and that creative thinking, that empathy is one of the most important business skills that people can have, that leaders can have within the technology industry. And women are undercut all the time. They are not seen as being the leaders in this field, but they are actually particularly very well suited to be making a difference within these changes within technology.
Well, we clearly have the skill set and that those 10,000 hours of practice. You know, as you're talking about creative thinking, you know, tied to empathy, kind of makes me think about an earlier discussion when we had talked a lot about active branding. So maybe you can explain what this means to you.
Well, when I started in this role 11 years ago, you know, my job was really about determining what co-op did well and how we were differentiated in delivering financial services and technology, and then crafting that in a really beautifully succinct message, and that was compelling, and pushing that out through advertising, and then figuring out how that would then link back to our sales journey, and so on and so forth. It was about building the brand, building leads. Things have evolved now where marketing is much more of experience building, and it's much more democratic. You mentioned social media. Your brand is who you are and how you behave and how others behave with you and engage with you and experience you. So you'll see so much of this industry has evolved more into being a technology role, being a digital role, and being an experience role. So this idea of active branding is really this putting your money where your mouth is. How are you delivering on what you say you are? And I'm finding more and more that I'm doing things that are analyzing our operations or seeing how we're providing service and experience throughout all of our channels. And is that in keeping with who we think we are? Is that congruent with our messaging and our brands? And so creating both programs and defining kind of a litmus test for should we get into this, should our business go in this direction, or should we be offering these kinds of products in this way? If you create a test for that based on what you're all about as a brand, that will help you to actively live that brand. If a brand is a message, it's hollow and people can sniff it out immediately. And that's where I believe the chief marketing officer or somebody in a leadership role within marketing needs to be more at the strategic level and participating in that way to make sure that you're believable, that your organization is believable.
Absolutely, because at the end of the day, it's not about, hey, that great message, but more about what did you experience at every single touch point. So active branding is the experience on so many different levels that the company
Absolutely. People are very cynical. And I think that's where they don't want to listen to advertising. Anything that seems contrived is not seen as real. They want authenticity, and they have the ability to delve into a company more than they've ever had before. They
Absolutely.
Can make change within a company more than they've ever had before. The customer has that ability. So we have to think differently about marketing as not a message pusher, but an experienced developer or an experienced designer to ensure that we're always living up to who we say we are. And that's something that we don't always get right. I struggle with that, and I work across teams, and it's uncomfortable. People don't want me digging into their business. It's not always easy. We don't get it right all the time. I don't get it right all the time, but I know it's something that I'm passionate about because I always want to be delivering the truth. I always want to be ensuring that we're really adding value. And that's what I think the new marketing role is that ensuring you're living up to who you say you are.
Oh, exactly. Okay, so delivering the truth, adding value, and living up to who you say you are. This speaks to social media and the transparency that an organization has to put out there, the people behind the organization. So this is a two-part question.
Okay.
How do you feel, you guys are doing with social media and or, what are you doing with social media? And kind of, give yourselves a grade or even your industry. Do you feel that you are progressing nicely with social technologies and technology in general?
I think as an industry, we have a long way to go because we have had a hard time capturing people's attention. And for our industry, we're Co-op Financial Services is a financial technology provider for credit unions. So we have 3,500 clients that have 3,500 individual brands, and we're trying to tell a story about the category, and Co-op is almost like the intel inside. We're that fintech provider inside of a credit union that provides access and convenience. So when you think about social, we have to try and capture that mind share and help understand through content development that this is the difference between a credit union and other kinds of financial institutions, and we're about helping people in their financial lives. So it's a lot more subtle. I think social media and social technology is your new media plan. It's the new methodology of distribution. You're not buying ads in magazines or television. You can, but there's some, the more of my budget goes toward buying media because you can promote posts. You can do things very cheaply via social.
Are you getting the same effects? Do you feel like you're making a difference? If you're making the investment more into the social media, are you seeing the impact that you want?
We're seeing it on a more targeted level. The part that's more difficult is telling the overall brand story. And I guess the strategy that I would liken it to is almost like a political platform that the credit union industry could think about themselves as delivering content and storytelling across the social technology platform that would be consistent in messaging almost to the RNC or the DNC. You have all of these different candidates and all of these different states and all of these different local factions, but they all are kind of on message. And that's been the new way to think about it. We've actually had a great deal of engagement. We have the biggest social media following on Twitter and Facebook in our entire industry, ahead of some of the largest credit unions in the country. So we get a great deal of engagement. The challenge is the fragmentation. It's easy to tell a story in an ad or a piece of creative. Today's storytelling is content. That journalism degree is coming in real handy, Deidre, because it's I'm coming full circle to storytelling. I pretty much run a publishing arm within my organization, and then I have data scientists and social technologists that think about how to distribute that content across social channels where it will get consumed, and then we track those that consumption down to a sales conversion. So it's very, it goes back to that age-old idea of the intersection of art and science. It's just applying that art and science in a new way.
Well, and it's so important that art meets science. You know, what you said about the storytelling, and, you know, it really is true that as companies advance using social media the right way, there's, you know, the saying that with all the content and the storytelling, like your own media company.
Right. It's important to kind of behave that way, that you're understanding your brand and that you're living it actively, but then you're breaking down that messaging into true stories. They have to be true. They mm-hmm. can't be contrived. And you're giving people value. It isn't just communicating an entertaining message. It has to be done in a way that adds value and brings education and makes them think of the problem that you're solving in a new way. And when you can deliver it with emotion and with creativity, you've won.
Oh, yes.
Read it, we'll engage with it, and we'll share it.
Right. So as you're doing all of this, I was just going to say, as you're doing all of this, because it definitely takes, it's an investment of time and resources. And, you know, it sounds like you've got the media engine working. Do the professionals in other departments and other areas, do they get it as well? Do they see what you're doing, and do they see the value?
It's hard. I count it as a big win that in my organization, I have a very close, my department, my area has a very close relationship with sales, a very close relationship with product development, and a very close relationship with IT. That to me is winning the lottery internally.
Yes.
When I started here, that was not the case. Nobody wanted to talk to me. Nobody wanted to work with me. I was the scary kid that came in and
asked a lot of questions.
Yeah, asking a lot of questions, having a lot of ideas. But the more that you participate, is that business is the space between functions. Most of business is being done between, say, marketing and IT, or between product and marketing and sales. It's that point of collaboration where I need to understand how there is consistency across our digital channels in the way that we service our clients. IT can do all the development on the back end, but if we're not thinking through what that experience is and how it delivers on our brand, we've lost. If at the same token, product can turn out technology, but if we haven't thought through what will the, so many of these are digital technologies, if we haven't thought through how that is consistent across all of those end products and how those deliver on our brand story and how those add value to the financial services experience, we've lost. When we can improve those experiences and make them deliver on our brand, we've won. And the more that we do that, the more sales wins. So the front end of the house, our client servicing, our product development, our selling, the more we collaborate, the better we do. I'm working on, you know, there's been such an evolution within experience building. and within marketing. And I'm really working on building tighter relationships with kind of weird bedfellows like operations and marketing. You wouldn't think that those go together, but when more and more consumers and clients are expecting a fabulous experience, you start getting into operations. So it's important for me to have empathy. I come back to that again with my internal colleagues and my friends, and understand what their fears are and understand what they're worried about and what I can do to help.
Absolutely.
So it's a work in progress. I cannot say that we're perfect.
No, but it, you know, certainly you've been breaking down the barriers, getting rid of silos, and, you know, it really speaks to the level of collaboration and at the end of the day, the experience that comes out of it for your consumers. Okay,
I love
so
that you brought up silos. I have one of my staffers, a member of my team, a couple years ago said, "Sam, if I were to give you a title, I'd call you the Silo Slayer."
Awesome.
I love
title,
that,
huh?
That name. I would love to be the Silo Slayer. So I think that's something that we all need to be thinking about to be successful, because I go back to that business today lives in the space between functions. You have to do whatever you can to break down those silos and collaborate with teams that may be pushing back and not wanting to do that.
Yeah, and give them time, you know, enough working at it and seeing the benefits. You will continue to be the Silo Slayer.
I
just know it. Well, last question, super easy. How can my listeners find out more about you and your work?
Well, I can be found on Twitter at Sam Smythe Paxson. I can also be found on LinkedIn, Samantha Paxson. And of course, our organization's website, Co-op Think and Co-op FS, and those may also be found on Twitter as well.
Fantastic, Samantha. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and all of your insights. We'll have to check back in to see how your silo slaying is going.
Thank you so much. I've appreciated being here.
Oh, you're welcome. I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on the socialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.